This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Chris Unger from Negociants. Negociants owned by the Hillsmith family vineyards, which includes Yalumbra, which is one of my favourites, particularly the Viogniers I love. How are you, Chris?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, great.
Excellent. You've just done a presentation at Wines of Australia on environmental aspects in wine. Something I wouldn't mind touching on and getting a bit more detail about is the life cycle model you touched on. What exactly is the life cycle model?
So yeah, it's an adoption of the environmental management system, which looks at the practices in the vineyard from right down from the soil through to the water, to the growing, to the machinery that we use, and how we can better look after the environment in which we're operating, I guess.
Do you go all the way to the end, the wine's produced, it's in a bottle now, or do you even go any further than that?
Yeah, we do. That's the life cycle approach. So we look at from the establishment of the vineyard right down to the end consumer and the packaging that they may have at the end and the recycling of that packaging.
One of the key things in the UK, which I'm sure you're probably aware of, is that green glass is not green in the UK. It's quite bad because we don't really have an outlet for all this glass that's arriving into the country. Some people have been positioning it maybe as bulk importing a wine and then bottling in the UK, because then at least you'll use some of that green glass, because you can't, once it's been coloured green, it's not really good for anything else apart from green.
Yeah. I mean, we will never, not in the foreseeable future, we will never bottle away from our wineries, from where we produce our wines. We like to have the control on how those wines are bottled and how they're looked after. But I guess we're looking at alternative, packagings, looking at lightweighting our glass, how we can better sort of reduce that impact of that green glass. But yeah, in the foreseeable future, we won't be shipping our wine over in bulk and bottling in the UK.
Have you ever thought about using clear glass then?
We use clear glass for a few of our products, like in the rosés and things like that. But I guess it's also, protecting the wines from light as well. I mean, in our premium products, you can't put one of our top reds in a clear glass. It's the green glass protects it from those UV rays. So we wouldn't do that. And I guess it's all product specific.
Some people have been, supermarkets have been trialing PET bottles, plastic bottles for wine. Maybe not necessarily Yalumbra, because you guys are normally reasonably premium.
As far as I know, we haven't looked into it. I can't imagine that's the way we want to go. I think at the moment glass is our option. I mean, obviously we look at different seals and things like that for the glass. But I
actually quite like the idea of clear glass for immediate drinking wines.
Yeah, definitely. For early consumption and things like that, I can't see it being a problem. But I think it all comes down to where that product's going to end up and what price and what the consumer wants, I guess, ultimately.
You talk about downsizing your glass. What exactly do you mean by that?
Making lighter glass, basically. So reducing the thickness, I guess, trying to maintain the integrity of that bottle.
So using less glass,
but also we want to maintain the strength of the bottle and the integrity of that bottle as well. We can't lose the strength of that either.
I was reading that glass manufacture, from the sand, the silica sand all the way through, is actually really energy intensive as a method, and therefore it's quite CO2 intensive as well. So anything where you can reduce the weight of the glass is obviously going to help significantly in your CO2 footprint.
Well, I guess with our Greener Business Alliance, we work with our suppliers on how we can achieve better efficiencies and better environmental sustainability with all our producers, suppliers, whatever it might be. So no doubt we're talking to our glass suppliers as well and seeing what things we can come up with them to improve their energy efficiency.
What sort of things have you implemented in Australia to help you?
It's all based around the environmental management system, so which is the ISO 14001 accredited. We just look at a whole of business lifecycle approach to environmental sustainability, and the environmental management system is made up of five key pillars, and that is the product stewardship, land stewardship, greenhouse challenge, the environmental citizenship, waste management as well. So
is there anything in particular you're doing in the vineyard to manage your waste, or
A variety of things. What sort of waste, though? I mean, is it? I mean, water waste. We've got contingency plans for wastewater, recycling our water in our wineries. In our Moppa winery, we have an amazingly low, wine to water ratio. So we're below 2 liters per 1 liter of wine.
2 liters of water.
Water per 1 liter of wine, which is very, very low, virtually not. No drop of wine goes down the drain where we don't look at whether we can use it again in some other aspect, whether it is for cleaning or whatever it might be. So every drop of water.
Drop of water, yeah. You said yeah. Drop of wine.
Every drop of water, yeah. So, and we just sort of see where we can reuse it and how we best can reuse it. And that's how we've got the ratio down so low, I guess.
What about other packaging? Like you see pallets of glasses turning up. They must be packaged in something. Do you recycle packaging?
Yeah,
do you specify the type of packaging you require? Because you're big enough to be...
I would say so. And I mean, again, that's working with our suppliers, I guess, and seeing how we can, you know, how we can help them reduce their waste and how they can supply us a greener, more sustainable product. The amount of product that we use that's in our packaging... I think it's 98% of what we use is from recycled material, a paper waste. So a very, very high level of what we buy into the winery is recycled for labels, cartons, things like that. So I guess as far as like, you know, the plastic around glass and whatever else and the pallets, I guess it's just working with those suppliers and seeing what the alternatives are where we can maintain quality assurance in our product, but also, you know, maintaining the sustainability of the environment.
Yeah, the life cycle model seems to be more about just being aware of things and making tweaks here and there. Is that
well? It's a dynamic model, I guess. It's not. There's no ultimate way to go. And I think it's looking at every level of production and consumption and how it interacts with each other, I guess. So, I mean, we've got the environmental management system, which is the core, or the environmental program, which is the core of the life cycle model. We use that, and then we can develop it to the different sort of levels of production, whether it's in the vineyard, in the winery.
One of the things that came up about 6 months ago was the Times wrote an article on, you know, don't buy your wine from New Zealand, Australia, Chile, all those sort of places. Buy it from France because it's closer, therefore the food miles are less.
Yeah, I mean, food miles is... It's obviously something that the UK consumers jumped on board to, but it's I think they've jumped on board. It's the lowest common denominator, I guess, in environmental sustainability. It's easy to understand and it's easy for people to associate with. But really, I mean, you've got to look at it as far as inefficient miles and efficient miles. Inefficient miles is sticking a pallet of wine on the back of a lorry from the south of France to bring it into London, whereas an inefficient food mile would be sticking... you know, thousands and thousands of pallets on a boat.
I used the same numbers that Times used
yeah.
to calculate it out, and it was just south of Burgundy, you know, top end of Rhone Valley, south of Burgundy, that it was more efficient to truck in than bring a bottle of wine over on a container from New Zealand. So, yeah. You know, as long as you're getting your wines from Burgundy, Champagne, Chablis, you're fine, you can bring it over, but otherwise you're better off New Zealand and Australia.
You know, the food miles thing... The consumer has jumped on board of that and they're very aware of it. So I think it's great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think it's fantastic that the consumer is actually interested in a product that's environmentally sustainable. But I think we need to take it to the next step now where that they have to know a little bit more about this and really look into it and sort of look at a greater picture rather than something that's really sort of just one dimensional, which is a pallet of wine on a truck to my table and that's it. There's nothing before or after that. Whereas really you need to look at it from how that wine was produced, how those grapes were grown, what happens to that packaging after the consumer drinks it. Is the local council collecting that glass and recycling it? Are they taking that cart and recycling it? I mean, we need to look, sort of spread the view a bit further than just the pure transport of a product, because really it's only a very small part of, you know, the problem, I guess. And, you know, the emissions from carbon emissions from transporting wine, it's a small percentage of the life cycle of that wine. The production is using a lot of carbon dioxide or releasing a lot of carbon dioxide. So we need to look at it in a broader sort of perspective rather than just transportation, I think. So.
I think one of the guys who introduced you, Stephen,
yeah.
what was it,
Stephen Strawn.
Stephen Strawn. He's saying 55% of CO2 comes from the production side.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
45% from shipping, bottling.
And I think, I mean, yeah, really, it's the actual transportation and shipping of the product is a very, very small part of what the of carbon emissions. So,
Yulumba Negotiates, Hillsmith family. You also own Oxford Landing, which is a pretty big brand in the UK.
It is a very big brand, yeah. And we're doing a lot of work there in setting aside land for wildlife sanctuary and replanting to natural bushland as a sink, I guess, for that carbon dioxide. And we have a project starting this year, 2008, where we're going to start replanting. And I think that's going to be an ongoing thing. But it's just sort of, I guess, shows that our commitment towards trying to, you know, improve our sustainability and provide greenhouse sinks. But yeah, so that's a really exciting project, and I think that's going to be sort of carried out for the next few years.
Is the idea to improve the native plants? And
yeah, basically, and yeah, animals? Yeah. Maintain, you know, first of all, replanting more trees, greater carbon sinks, and also, yeah, encouraging native wildlife, fauna, flora, whatever it might be, back into that area, and just rehabilitating, I guess, the ground that's been left to sort of, you know, has been intensively farmed. We haven't used it for vineyard. It's not suitable for vineyard, but you know, it's more than suitable for replanting to natural vegetation. So
I must admit, I hate the concept of trees as carbon sinks. I really loathe carbon sinks to tree, because whilst the tree's growing, it's soaking up carbon.
Yeah.
But after that, it doesn't soak up anymore, and then you've got to maintain it in perpetuity forever.
Yeah.
Without, so that the carbon doesn't get released. So
ultimately, I mean, by going back to natural vegetation, you're rehabilitating the land. So it's not going to have a negative effect. It is going to have a positive, an overall positive effect. And I mean, I guess a lot of people are using, you know, replanting and carbon sinks as a way to offset their carbon, you know, their carbon footprint, I guess. It's not efficient, and it doesn't really look at the bigger model. I can buy as many carbon credits, or I can plant as many trees, but, you know, I want to look at my whole business sustainably and see how you can, you know, really, you go to the crux of the problem, I guess, and how you can better improve it. And I think, you know, natural vegetation, and that's the way to be going. And I mean, we're using, you know, indigenous plants to that area, so I really think that's where the benefit's going to come. And it's not going to hurt the land, and it's only really going to bring the land back into balance, I guess, and nurturing the soil and the surrounds.
Excellent. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Chris. Thanks very much for your time.
No worries. Thank you.